Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome to the Cyberpunk Lorecast, where we brave scanning the net to find all the deep history and lore of cyberpunk.
I'm Toasty, a fixer that's new to Night City with a desire to jump into the details of this gritty setting.
And I'm Genesis, an old school media tech with a love of character deep dives.
Together, we will bring you the foundations of the past, the state of Night City today, and the news of the future.
We've got incoming. Let's Delta. Welcome back to another episode of the Cyberpunk Lorecast. I'm your girl Genesis, and with me, as always, is Toasty. Today is a special episode with over 856,000 subscribers on YouTube and close to 1.5 million monthly listeners on Spotify, 11 full albums, and overall just a super chill dude. We are so honored to welcome Gav from Miracle of Sound onto the show.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the very flattering intro.
Oh,
it's nice when people do their research beforehand.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely researching and Googling you, and then I was like, is this creepy stalker mode? No, this is just a fangirl looking into like the major history and the lore of Miracle of Sound. And then your numbers were astronomical, because it's like I've been a follower since way back in the day. I mean, I remember listening to the Commander Shepard song when it first came out. I was like following you on YouTube since level one. I've been here. And so
you've been here since before the first version of City of Night. So
yep.
Nice. Yeah, things really kind of things were going well up until about 2020, and then things really blew up, which was unintentional, but very much appreciated and enjoyed.
And then TikTok became a thing, and your sound bites exploded even further.
Yes, exactly. TikTok is a double-edged sword for me. There's been good and bad that came along with it, but for the most part, it's had a good influence on my work and my career.
So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into nerd-themed music?
Yeah, I kind of, I've told this story many, many times, so anyone who already knows me knows this story. I was in bands for most of my 20s. I did tours. I was signed to record labels. Kind of the old cliche, just when we were about to make it with one of my bands, the whole thing fell apart. And the record label dropped us, and we all fell out because of basically musician stuff. And I was kind of, I had poured 10 years into this band, so I was pretty depressed when it fell apart. And I just posted a stupid song about Gordon Freeman online as a joke to try and cheer myself up, and people liked it. So I did a couple more, and after doing about 9 or 10 of these, I started to realize that this could actually be a potential career. It just kind of evolved from there. And over time, the songs have stopped being kind of funny or memes. And now I try to write songs that I'm kind of actually proud of and will still want to listen to in 10 years. And my golden rule for songs these days is that someone who's never played a game in their life has to still be able to enjoy the song. So Miraculous Sound Songs in 2020, it's 2023, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I forget. Miraculous Sound Songs in 2023 are much different than they were in 2010 for the most part.
Gordon Freeman saved my life. Oh,
that's the one. Yeah. That is the song that started this project.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I can see the evolution of it because like the song that always stuck out to me was the Commander Shepard song. And that one, you have to know the game lore in order to kind of understand what's going on in that song.
Yeah, plus the song is a meme in itself. It's kind of a joke. It's not meant to be taken very seriously. That was the first kind of moment that the project started to get some traction. And then it was with Wake the White Wolf I think I put that out in 2014. It was out before The Witcher 3 came out, I remember that. And that's when the channel kind of doubled in size, when that song came out. And then when Valhalla Calling came out, everything just went completely gangbusters. When that song came along, that was when the channel really exploded and my career just tripled, quadrupled, went into the stratosphere at that point. Completely by accident, I might add.
Not by accident. You've put in the time, the hard work, and the effort that it takes to create the music. So kudos to you on that. It's not an accident. But speaking of on that, how do you pick what games that you're going to cover and what games you're going to create music for?
That process has changed a lot over the years. There was a time in particular from about like when this started up until about 2016, 2017, where I would try and like cover almost every big game that was coming out. And I got really burnt out on that. And nowadays I don't even pick games. I'm like, if I get inspired, I'll make something. I mean, last year I only covered 2 games in my songs. It was Elden Ring and God of War. And that was only because when I was playing those, the ideas for songs just started coming to me naturally because of the themes. And that's kind of how I operate now. It's like, if I get inspired, great. If I don't, I'm not going to force it. And I'm lucky enough to be in a position now where I can do it that way, because back in 2014, 2015, it was like much more focused on I have to keep up with the algorithm or I'll go broke.
Yeah.
But thanks to Valhalla Calling now being my day job, that's not an issue anymore. And the numbers for the other songs have gone up a lot since that song blew up as well. So that's really nice. The Elden Ring songs and the God of War song this year performed really, really well. So I was really happy with that. Oh, I did a Horizon Forbidden West song as well. That's three games this year.
Yeah. It was strong choices, though. I mean, Elden Ring, God of War were huge. I mean, the two hugest games of the year, I think. So,
both with wonderful stories, with a lot to do. I mean, I did 3 Elden Ring songs. So. Mm-hmm. There was one for Radahn, there was one for Rani, and there was one about kind of the universe at large and the Tarnished. And that game just blew my mind. I've played through it nonstop since it came out, and every time I try to play another game now, I'm like, this isn't Elden Ring. It kind of ruined other open world games for me.
Probably for a lot of people.
It took over for a while, definitely. I have not touched it because I'm afraid of getting sucked into it. And I'm like, I have a whole bunch of other games that I want to play. And if I start Elden Ring, I might not stop.
Yeah, it's a life eater and a life changer, that game. It's like, once you play it, you just realize what's lacking in so many open world games these days. And it just really, the sense of pure freedom and of exploration in that game is just incredible. And actually, funny enough, being on this podcast, Cyberpunk 2077 is the only other open world game that I really still play a lot nowadays. Because I kind of have a similar vibe with Cyberpunk that I did with Elden Ring, and that there's so much off the beaten path for you to find that if you just take like a few hours to just not do the story and not do side missions and just wander around and explore, there's a lot to find. And that's my favorite thing in video games, is when you get to go off the beaten path and make your own little adventures.
I think one of the coolest little not an actual mission moments is you can go to a rooftop and all of a sudden it will start raining no matter what the rest of the city's weather is like. And then it reenacts the scene from Blade Runner, the final ending. And so I was like, you don't know that this is here unless you go and you find it by exploring and jumping to top random rooftops.
There's a lot of stuff hidden on the rooftops in that game. A lot of Easter eggs and loot.
Yeah.
I hope they do more with that in the DLC. I hope they give us a lot more interiors to explore and a lot more ways to just exist in the city. Like I know a few of the devs on the game, and I've told them my number one request is to just be able to exist in the city in more ways. Like, let me go for a beer with Panam. Like, let me go clubbing with Judy. Let me watch a movie with River. Let me show Takamura some like cool music that's the in music, because he probably never heard the cool music. You know, little things like that I would love in the game, to just exist in Night City without the pressure of the main story, you know?
That sounds amazing. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your V? You know, it's your background, my your playstyle.
Which one? I've done two almost 100% playthroughs, and I've got a third one, so they're all different. My first V was Nomad, and the reason I picked Nomad was because as a new player discovering Night City for the first time, I didn't know the city streets, I didn't know the layout, so I felt it would be suitable that my V also wasn't so familiar with the city itself. It was more immersive for me that way. I know most people kind of picked Street Kid, I think, on their first playthrough, and I did that on my second run, and it doesn't really make a huge difference, though, does it?
Not really. I went Corpo on my first run.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. I had, like, two for my first one, because I was, like, that was back when I was, like, testing out streaming a bit, so I had, like, stream versus, you know, my personal time. So, but Nomad was like my, what I gravitated to. I always have. I mean, I just love the idea of the Nomads and their whole thing. You know, I play a lot of Cyberpunk Red. I got Nomad characters in that. It's just,
the Nomad storyline in the game is great. As I really liked all those side missions.
Mm-hmm. Feels the most personal, I think, for a lot of the missions is that whole thing. So
yeah, and it's not as for me also, it's not quite as dark and depressing as Judy and River's stories.
Yeah.
I love me a good dark story, but sometimes I just want a story that is about hope and, like, you know. And I felt the Nomad story had a little bit of that in it.
Yeah.
My poor wife, she's not a gamer at all, and we're watching The Last of Us at the moment, and every week she's, like, terrified, sad, upset, crying, and then spends the rest of the week going, I can't wait for the next episode. And she's like, it can't, and after episode three, she's like, surely it can't get more sad than this, can it? I'm like, oh.
you wait.
You ain't seen nothing yet. So, actually, that was one of the reasons I didn't enjoy The Last of Us 2 so much, was because the bleakness and the relentless misery just got to me eventually, and I just kind of got lost interest halfway through. I was like, okay, well, everything, when everything that happens is awful and bad all the time, and everyone's miserable all the time, and everyone dies and gets hurt, and it's just I've become so burnt out on it now that I don't care anymore. And that's why I loved the Nomads quest in Cyberpunk, because there was a lot of hope there and a lot of kind of, I won't say positivity, but there was a bittersweet hope in there, I think.
Yeah, because even when things were going really bad, you had the family of the Nomads to kind of fall back on. You knew that you weren't the only one going through this sadness. You weren't the only one trying to survive.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
You had your family.
Exactly. I wish I got more time with them. And actually, I always pick the Nomad ending. I don't want to spoil anything, but I presume people know there are different endings to the game. Mm-hmm. None of the endings satisfy. I have to say, my biggest problem with the game, and this is another thing I've given as feedback, but this is never going to be changed because it's so intrinsic to the game. But my biggest problem with Cyberpunk was how at odds the story was with the open world sandbox nature of the mechanics of the game. They just don't seem to gel with each other. It's like the kind of feeling of urgency and finality that goes with the story is very much at odds with the very free and open and time wasty feel of the open world.
Yeah, I can see that. It's definitely, you feel rushed, and yeah. But like then you take the time and you're like, well, technically a week has passed of me just exploring. Yeah.
Fucking around, jumping on buildings.
Should I be dead right now? Probably, yeah. Right? Like,
yeah.
No, you just gotta
I mean,
think
when
that...
I play the game, it's like, I am not, I just kind of ignore the story until I have to do it, because it's so much fun to do everything else that I just kind of put the story on the back burner.
Time only moves forward when you're doing main quest lines. Time, yeah. Just you're in a time bubble while you're side questing and exploring.
So. Developers, stop making urgent storylines an open world games challenge. it's in so many games. Fallout 4, even Witcher 3 fell victim to it a little bit. I'm like, just give us a quest that only moves when we want it to. That's, I think, well, even Skyrim had that problem a little bit as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and Mass Effect also, Mass Effect 3 definitely had that. The Reapers are invading. They're invading. Oh, but stop off on this side planet to maybe help a little one Volus dude.
I have to make up with my dad. Can you, like, delay the Reaper invasion, please? To be fair to Mass Effect, though, Mass Effect is a bit more focused in its kind of, like, it's a lot smaller levels wise and stuff like that. So I think Mass Effect kind of didn't require as much of a suspension of disbelief with it as like maybe Skyrim or Cyberpunk or any of those games. Fallout 4, I finished the story once, and in all my playthroughs I just never bothered again because I just don't care about my son. I really don't care. I just want to explore and have fun and climb up on the buildings. And speaking of games with surprisingly great vertical exploration, Fallout 4, a lot of people who play the game don't actually know there's like a whole upper level to the city of Boston that you can explore. And once you get up there, it's amazing. It's so open. And there's like this whole like sky city in Fallout 4 that a lot of players never even find.
I'm playing my first Fallout 4 playthrough right now. I've got like 80 hours into it so far. I think I am getting... I actually am at like the end game mission. I could go start and go get into the Institute. But I'm just having fun right now. I'm building up all my settlements and collecting all the companions.
You don't... Not to spoil anything, but finding the Institute isn't a no going back point. You can go into the Institute and still be able to do everything you want to do.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
Mm-hmm.
The game actually tells you when it's hitting the point of no return, so.
I love that in games.
Definitely preferable. Do you have a favorite playstyle, though, for Cyberpunk? Just curious.
I'm pretty boring, to be honest with you. I like assault rifles, and I like hacking. So I'll basically just soften up the room with a few hacks and then just mow everyone down with an assault rifle and a shotgun. I see these players doing the crazy melee builds where they're running in with swords and stuff, but I'm 42 and my eyes aren't the best. I think I would get sick if I played that playstyle. I just get dizzy even watching the videos of the melee builds.
That's what I did. It was the melee build, because it's all about building your, was it cold-blooded or something? It just makes you insanely fast and attack insanely fast. So,
yeah, no, for me, it's all like hack all the cameras, hack everyone, knock them all out, and that really overpowered, what's it called, where you make everyone get sick.
Contagion.
Yeah, it's so OP. And then I basically just go in and mop up the survivors with an assault rifle and a shotgun.
That's my playstyle. I love doing... I actually really like blunt weapons also. So I'll contagion everybody and then just go hit them a few more times until they pass out. Yep.
Nice. I love that there's so many ways to play that game, actually. It was one of the things that got me hooked when it first came out. Yes, I liked the game a lot when it first came out. Shoot me.
I was in love with the game when it first came out. I'm not even like that's
it was my number two on my games of the year list for that year after Ori and the Will of the Wisps. And if the game had been finished when it came out, it probably would have been easily my game of the year.
Yeah. I think the real thing, because people that were able to play it, like me, I have a, you know, decently spec'd PC, so I didn't have that many problems with it. You know, some bugs, but none of them were game-breaking bugs. So I was able to play it through to completion, and it was fine. But a lot of people, console players or, you know, lower spec PCs, it was just like, it was unplayable because it was just too much.
Yeah, so. And I'm very aware of how fortunate I was to play it on a... I think I was on a 3080 when I played it at launch, and of course that is going to give you a better experience. I didn't have any... I honestly really didn't have many bugs. I was like, I think I'm playing a different game. But I did watch the footage that the console players were having, and it was... I can understand why people were upset about that, really.
Yeah.
So I have to know... Who is your favorite romance?
It's been Pan Am in every playthrough.
All right.
Easy. Yeah.
I was expecting. I kind of figured that once he said he really liked the nomads.
I'm so boring and vanilla. Look, in Mass Effect, Miranda every time. In Pan Am every time. You know? I guess it just reflects my real life tastes. I'm a cis straight guy, you know?
I am a Carrie-mancer.
My wife is a brown-eyed brunette, so I tend to gravitate towards brown-eyed brunettes. I think a lot of people love Judy, don't they?
Judy saved life. I've made no. Everyone knows that I've been the number one Judy supporter since like my second Patreon episode when I had already finished the game, and since then. So everyone knows that, you know.
Well, Judy's awesome. No, nothing against Judy. It's just, you know, Pan Am number one.
No, for sure.
And I romance Carrie. I cannot get enough of that man. So I love that there is that aspect for, like, all of us have the different choices and we all have those reasons for liking these characters so much. And I love that. The other show that I do analyzes video game romances. So I know I've played out so many different romances and watched so many different videos, just learning more about, like, how much more you find out about a character once you actually enter a relationship with them. You find out so much more about Miranda than you would if you didn't romance her. So I love that. Romance is definitely a part of Cyberpunk. I wish there was a little bit more to it. But that's a whole separate issue.
Maybe in the DLC. Maybe you can romance the president. Who knows?
I'm weird with like video game romances. Like I'll let my character do it if it's in the game, but I don't really care much about it. Like I'm never romance in a game is never a selling point to me. If it's in it, okay, cool. If it's not, whatever, you know. Although I there's a game called Divinity Original Sin 2, which I do think it's some of the romances in that game are just so funny you can't not do them. It lets you romance a literal pile of bones. So
okay, wait. I need to put this game on my list.
if you like BioWare's games, then definitely play Divinity Original Sin 2 because the writing in that game and the companions that you meet, they're as good as the ones in Dragon Age and Mass Effect. It is an old school CRPG though, so if you're like me, just put it on easy mode because I'm so bad with turn-based combat, and I put it on the easiest mode available because I'm too impatient to be tactical.
Jen just added it to the list for 2025.
I did. It's like actually on the paper. No, I'll play it and then add it to the master list of episodes we have coming up. But okay, so back to 2077, because I've been trying to figure this out for myself, because each mission in 2077 is a song title, and like the genres are so wild and varying, and most of the time it relates back to the mission at hand, but not always. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think it's part of Johnny, like, are they playing up to Johnny's rocker boy? Or do you think that there is actually a theme to it and I've just missed it?
I don't know why they did it, and I don't know what it's, I presume it's to do with Johnny, but I loved that they did it. When I started realizing that they were song titles, I was like, oh, this is so cool. I loved, some of them were just so perfectly chosen, like Pyramid Song for the underwater level with Judy, because of course that Radiohead song's video is all underwater and the song is about jumping into the river and swimming underneath. And some of the song titles they chose were just so perfect for the missions. But I've no idea why. I've no idea what was the decision-making process. I presume it's to do with a musician living in your brain. As someone with a musician living in their brain, you do tend to think of things in terms of music and songs a lot.
Oh, yeah, okay. The musician in your brain is telling you that everything you're doing is musically related. I like
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I guess another question that I had is that when it comes to creating music based on a game that already has music in it, does that influence the tones and style that you use, or do you go with what you feel fits better instead?
That's a good question. I don't have a set rule for that. It's different each time, but I would say most of the time, yes, the soundtrack influences how I make the song sound. Unless the emotions or whatever that the game gave me feel different to the soundtrack. One example would be Breath of the Wild. The soundtrack in that is very minimalistic. And when I made the song, I did take influence from the soundtrack with like the piano and stuff, but I made it much more big and epic sounding and over the top and kind of grandiose than the actual soundtrack of the game, which is very small, surprisingly small sounding in comparison to the grand scope of the actual game, you know. But with Cyberpunk, well, the funny thing with Cyberpunk is I made most of the songs before it came out. But I know Marcin and we've worked together on other games, and I've heard his music, and I didn't get to hear any of the soundtrack before the game out, only what other people had heard, but I had a fairly good idea of what it would sound like. And Also, for me, of course, because City of Night, I wrote that after seeing one trailer. And it was very different sounding to the song that they used in that trailer. But I didn't have quite the skill or the gear at the time to make that song how I really envisioned it in my head. And it was nice to revisit that song just before the game came out and completely remake it and actually make it sound how I always imagined it sounding in my head, with a really kind of futuristic shine to it. And I love the remake we did of City of Night. It's one of my favorites. And that was very much influenced by the visuals and what I imagined the soundtrack was going to be like. Visuals are huge for me, sometimes even more than the music. Like I have like really strong synesthesia, and colors are everything, and visuals. And when I'm making music, a lot of the time it's me trying to give a representation and sound of the images I've been seeing in front of me for how many hours in the games. So I wanted the sound of neon and dark streets and mist and, you know, all of the cool Night City stuff. That was how that sounded in my head, like pink and black and green, neon green and blue. And that's what City of Night was for me, trying to express that in a sound.
And then we use little snippets from the Neon Red song in our show.
Speaking of synesthesia, Neon Red, I mean. But then, of course, that's also a double reference to the developer and to the Cyberpunk Red. So, sorry, I interrupted you there, Glenn.
Oh, no, that's great. I love that it's... And then, because, like, for me, I thought it was referencing to, like, when you're in, like, the hacking and then things will go red. And so to know that it's also a play on CD Projekt Red and Cyberpunk Red, that's really cool.
And it's also a play on, it's also just a play on the kind of violent emotions that are being felt with, like, cyberpsychosis and stuff like that. I don't like to explain that song too much, actually, because... It's written in a way that's meant to be kind of out to people's own interpretation. So I might just like let people interpret that one their own way. And actually, I've tried to, that's one thing I've done a lot more over the years as well, since I moved away from the kind of meme songs, is to write in a way that the listener can take their own meaning from the words, even if they've played the game. A line might mean like four different things to four different people, you know?
Oh, yes.
I'm just a number writing solo in the code mean? You know, that might mean something completely different to one person or someone else, you know?
When you said that, it was from a while ago, but in Sovngarde's song, you use the phrase, "My voice is my violence." Now, in the context of the game, it's because of your thooms and you're yelling at that. But that line affected me at a point in my life where I was like, I wasn't physically capable of doing something, but I had a voice. And I could use my voice to get what I needed. And so I was like, my voice is my violence. I can't take this out on you physically, but I can definitely yell back. So
I love hearing stuff like that. I love hearing how the song, a song that I made, will like mean something different to someone else and in context of their own life and experiences.
That was definitely.
And you can't really do that when you're saying, you know, you'll never be better than Commander Shepard. There's not really many ways you can interpret that. And, you
know. Yeah. I mean, you can fight like a Krogan, run like a leopard, but you'll never be better than Commander Shepard. There's no interpretation of that.
You're not really going to be like, I'm not going to be getting emails about that one from people saying that really helped me during a tough period of my life because, you know, I related to the lyrics.
And
but yeah, Cyberpunk, like both visually and music wise, it's just such an inspiring. I don't know. I've never played the old school RPG, so I only know it from the video game. But the genre as a whole is just really, it's got such a distinct look. And for me, that is really inspiring. Like, there's just something about those dark streets with the neon and the mist. And the mystery of what might be around every next corner, and just the majesty of these huge skyscrapers. And I'm obsessed with skyscrapers, and I refer to them in so many, like, black spires in the city sky, they shimmer and shine tonight. And then in the Deus Ex song, there's high-tech cathedrals rise and fall in great ravines. And that basically just is saying there are skyscrapers everywhere, you know?
Yeah, well, it's like you find the thing that you are really intrigued by, and somehow it leaks into so many different aspects of your life. Yeah.
I know. My mom, whenever she's joking about my career these days, and she's like, "To think I used to shout at you and tell you to stop playing those bloody video games."
Oh.
And now look at you.
My mom has said, "I'm so happy I put that Nintendo controller in your hand." So.
Yeah. Those were the days, Nintendo NES and SNES, and there were some real classics. A Link to the Past was literally the first game I ever really fell in love with. Like, that game was so ahead of its time and so unlike any other game at the time. It's just mind-blowing.
Oh, my sister and I poured so many hours into like the first Mario game. That was our game every day after school. I was always player one because I'm older.
That game was so difficult. Like,
yeah.
I don't think I ever finished it. I would get to World 8 and never be able to beat World 8.
I don't know if I've ever seen end credits on Mario, but I remember playing a lot when I was a kid.
We finished Mario 2 and we finished Mario 3, but I don't think we were able to finish Mario Brothers 1. It was just too hard. Ironically, as a massive From Software fan, it might sound weird what I'm about to say, but I don't miss when video games were all really difficult. From Softs are probably the only difficult games I will tolerate the difficulty in.
I think there's a difference between difficult and challenging games that make you think or play different tactics, like running one tactic way through an entire game, in comparison to, no, the controls are difficult, it's hard to maneuver, it's hard to actually beat this game because the mechanics exactly. of it.
Yeah, you know. Because you're totally right there, because FromSoft games are more about knowledge than skill. That's why someone like me is able to beat them. You can completely trivialize Elden Ring with a good build. Like, you can make the game really easy mode once you know what to do. But the challenge comes from learning how to do all that stuff. So, Sorry. Did you play? Did you two play Cyberpunk on hard at all? I've kind of stuck to normal, but I'm kind of tempted to try the hard mode for my third big run. When the DLC comes out.
So I have, but specifically when I did, it was before they've like, I can't remember what update it was, but they've since modified it to where the hard difficulty is actually kind of difficult, because back whenever like the first game first came out, I think like, I at some point I cranked that up to like very hard, and it was still a very easy game. Like, there was no difficulty there at all, because like depending on your build, it was just like.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like the difficulty curve is a little bit backwards in the game. Like, it starts pretty challenging, but once you start unlocking all the powers and hacking and everything, that's when it gets a lot easier towards the end game. Which is why I was always kind of. I start on normal and it feels good to me, but then by the end of the game, it feels a little bit too easy. So yeah, I was thinking maybe start on hard mode this time and make myself shout, get mad.
I think there was some update where they changed it to where like now playing in like hard mode actually like is, I think, extremely difficult at the beginning. Okay. And I'm sure it levels out. I mean, once you get your build going, it's always going to get easier, but I think the enemies scale a bit more.
Okay.
I mean,
So, I mean, you get to a point in the game where you just have, like, all enemies just shooting you with smart weapons, so you just cannot avoid damage at all. So you have to play very carefully. So,
yeah, because on normal, you're basically God by the end of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think this, my most recent playthrough, I'm playing it on hard or very hard. I can't remember exactly, but I die a lot. And I think I'm at like level, almost like level 30, and I'm still dying rather frequently. So, but I am trying different, like I'm not playing my go-to. I'm trying to play a bit more like, I guess, tactical and gunny. And I think using guns can make the game actually a bit more difficult whenever you actually have to like aim and I guess, yeah, play more tactically whenever you're with a bunch of enemies that are and they start getting, I think, the cyberware kind of like starts ramping up a bit of like fighting tiger claws at this level. I don't even want to do it. I like because there's always those people that like the super dodgy ones and they don't run out of dodge. They just keep doing it. So you're hitting like, I don't know, 12% of your shots because they just dodge every bullet. And it's like, stop it, please. Like 8 grenades later, I finally kill them, but it takes a minute.
Yeah, we'll see. I may drop to normal if the experience is too frustrating. I'm not good with difficult games at all.
Well, you can mitigate that. Like there's you just pop on like the cripple movement cyberware. Those guys are they're slabs of meat at that point. But
although I did like The Witcher 3, I thought was good on the harder mode because it just felt it made you use the potions and things a little bit more, and I liked that, having to kind of prepare for the fights and things. So I always play Witcher 3 on not the hardest, because that can piss off.
Death March, yeah.
No. The one just below that is perfect for me.
I've never even played it on Death March. I'm not good enough at video games, so me I don't too. Even bother.
My Death March playthrough, I think, is what made me switch off of Witcher 3 and starting playing other games.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, because I am a new girl. I am a new game plus girl, big time. Like, I am always like, okay, let's go again. Let's go again. Let's go again. So, I mean, I started my Death March run with, like, a level 75 Geralt, and I'm like, maybe that wasn't smart, because the enemies are also level 75, but I've got level 1 gear. So I'm like, not good. Wow.
Yeah, that's like all of the Souls games as well. Well, when you start a new game, the enemies all get harder with each new game plus. And what it usually means is you stomp everything in the first half of the game, but then it starts to get really difficult in the late stages.
Those general like scenarios, as it becomes less about like, level difference or gear difference or whatever. Like with Death March, the key is not to have better gear. The key is to just not get hit. Yeah. Whether that's like popping a Quinn or dodges perfectly, which I mean, that's what it looks like whenever I watch a Souls game. Is that like, it's just like, let me just roll around for a while until the attack frame that I can actually hit them without worrying about taking damage, and then start rolling again.
I can't wait to actually play that game again. It unfortunately, the next gen version just unfortunately didn't like my PC rig for whatever reasons. And actually, we took it as an opportunity because my mix guy and me, we're remastering a lot of old songs at the moment, and Wake the White Wolf was going to be the opening song for the remasters album, but we couldn't quite get it sounding the way I wanted with my old mix. And due to me being delayed and being able to play the game because of the way it got released, we took that as an opportunity, and now I'm going to completely remake Wake the White Wolf from the ground up. That's like a nice way to celebrate whenever I can get The Witcher 3 working on my PC again. Because I got to capture footage for the video as well, so I have to wait until the game works for me. So I'm looking forward to that because I love the game so much and I can't wait to replay it.
Amazing. Oh, Wake the White Wolf is good. Lilac and Gooseberries. Ugh. Okay, now I'm just going to have to go and listen to all the music all over again, which...
I was surprised how well that song did, actually, the Yennefer song. I thought because the video had the show in it as opposed to the game, it wouldn't do as well. But yeah, it did pretty good.
All right. It's because
Yennefer is superior.
Oh, yeah. Are you Yennefer or Triss?
I wasn't too happy with some of the things the writers made her do in the second season of the show, though. Mm. I kind of felt, I don't know. I wasn't a fan of her choices in season two, and it felt a little bit at odds with the character that I knew. So we'll see how that ends up. Well, we know how it's going to end up. I mean, that show's getting cancelled. So, like.
Yeah, for sure.
There's no way they'll last more than one season without Henry. They won't.
I honestly don't even know if I'll get to a fourth season, in my opinion. Like, we'll see this third season. Of course, we'll have Henry. But, like, considering how many changes from, like, the original material there has to be in this, I highly doubt it. I don't know if you watch Blood Origin. Actually, don't, you know what? I shouldn't get started on that. Never mind. That's a rabbit hole we can't afford to go down.
I'll be honest with you. I don't even know if I'm going to watch season three because knowing how it ends, it's like, you know.
They say
they have found a very tasteful way to send Henry off. I'm like, have you though? I've heard a lot of things come out of the writers' mouths that they were kind of very confident about. And when I actually saw it, I was like, I think you were talking yourselves up a bit there.
Oh, they definitely do. They definitely do. We see what happens whenever they have the opportunity to do an original story for themselves. And we got Blood Origin.
That's why I think actually The Last of Us works a lot better is because they really do honor the source material, and when they make changes, they're not changes that shit all over the source material. Like episode 3 of The Last of Us, I was explaining to my wife, I was like, you don't get to see any of this in the game, but it's such a brilliant addition because it builds the universe. I know a lot of people didn't like that it didn't move the plot forward. I disagree with that. I think the letter that Bill wrote to Joel is what moves the plot forward, and that was the whole point of the episode, was Joel reading Bill's letter. But that's how you make changes to source material. It's not by completely changing everything people love about it, like The Witcher seems to want to do.
Honestly, I think that episode 3 of Last of Us deserves an award. I think it was just an incredible episode. And I'm not as like, I never finished The Last of Us. It's something on my to-do list, but I played through, I think, most of it. And I mean, what they're doing with it, I mean, for someone who's, like I said, I've only played through the part I played through one time, and I was still, you're still able to look at it and see the parts where you're like, I've experienced this before playing this game. I mean, like,
some of the scenes are word for word. It's like,
and like the first episode, I was just stunned by the fact that they had the exact like framing of the car scene and like the parts that like happen in the game that are just directly copied. And it was like,
some of the lines that they knew people would remember from the game, like, but you can't deny the view. I was hoping that line was coming, and when it came at the exact same moment as the game, I was like, yeah, those are the little things that make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how it goes. I'm not 100% sold on Bella Ramsey yet. I know that's probably a controversial opinion. I don't know if she can carry some of the things she's going to have to carry, but we'll see. Maybe she'll surprise me.
Speaking of really good adaptations, did you watch all of Edgerunners?
Yes. I'm not into anime at all. Let me just get that out of the way. I tried. I enjoyed the big movies like Ghost in the Shell and Akira. I thought they were really cool. But in general, anime just does nothing for me. The style they use to tell those stories, because it's so because it's so over the top and overacted, it always comes across really goofy to me, and I find it hard to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was cool. The visuals were amazing. Obviously, the music was fantastic in it. And it was a good opportunity to give Neon Red another cool video as well.
Yeah. With David and Lucy running around, I watched that one recently. Oh, it's so good. But no, the music in there, they definitely play with it a lot more, because now it's like whenever I hear some of those songs, they'll pop up on my Spotify, and I'm just like, no, why am I randomly crying again? Oh, because it's the song that they play in the final scene. That's why you're crying again.
So. Yeah, that was some heavy going in that last episode. Jesus.
Yeah. It's... I mean,
speaking
yeah.
of dark endings.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like you said that before, like it was like, you know, you like having like that bit of hope. And it's like some of these things, I mean, like these specific settings, it's like, yeah, the hope is what we cling to, but in the end, there's still none. I mean, it is cyberpunk. Like, expect bad things to happen, and they are going to happen, unfortunately.
Exactly. And that's why the endings in the video game are great endings for a cyberpunk story,
mm-hmm.
but not so much for an open world sandbox game.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But I love that Edgerunners like gave the game a whole new lease of life, and people are realizing now after there's a thing that happens, and you've seen it recently with Forspoken as well, that when a game isn't as good as people expect, or there's problems with it, there's this massive hate train on YouTube and social media, because people know they'll get clicks for hating on something, and they'll pick out all the worst parts. Like in Forspoken, there was that really cheesy, cheesy Marvel style dialogue that I kept seeing going around, and people just love to hate something. But then when you reevaluate a little bit later, when there's been time to kind of think about it and everyone's played it, I'm glad that Cyberpunk got another shot, because as I said, I liked it from the beginning. I thought it was a great story and a great game. It's got the best interactive conversation system I've ever seen in a game. I don't know why that doesn't get talked about enough. The conversations in Cyberpunk are more immersive than any other video game I've ever played. There's nothing like it. They're so incredibly detailed and wonderfully animated, and the way they go seamlessly from the world into those conversations, and it's just amazingly done. I'm glad people are kind of recognizing now, 2 years later, that it's actually a really good video game, you know.
And even when it's not voiced dialogue, somebody sends you a text message and you have different options of what you want to reply with. It's not just a move story forward mechanic, hit reply with what we've told you you're going to say. No, yeah. Very immersive.
They did a great job. So I can't wait for the next one. I have a weird wish for the next one. I don't want it to be in Night City. I'd love a new city to explore. Or I would love it to be so far in the future that Night City's like twice as big. So I have lots to explore.
Oh, for the next Cyberpunk game? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of wary of the Breath of the Wild sequel, actually, because it's just the same map with a few holes in it.
I'm definitely going to play Breath of the Wild 2. I am, because it's supposed to come out at the end of May.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for that one. I am eagerly awaiting the Phantom Liberty DLC release date to come out. Once we get that, oh.
That looks really, really good. I love that they got Idris Elba. It's like, how can we possibly find someone who's as cool as Keanu? And then it's like, well, let's get Idris fucking Elba.
Right?
Yep. Yep. We were losing our minds. We were sitting doing we're waiting to do an episode while we were like waiting for them to do the Game Awards, or show the, because we were like, they're gonna show it. When is it gonna happen? We're waiting, and so definitely lost our minds. And you should get more area in the DLC too.
Yeah, I hope they open up more of the map. I'd love to see some of the. All those places they had in the concept arts before the game came out that didn't make it into the game, I would love if those got unlocked and built. And remember, there was like that big glass building. It was this really kind of wealthy looking area with this huge glass building that looked like a museum or something. I was like, I couldn't wait to go and see that building. And then it wasn't in the game. So I hope they do some of that. They put in extra areas to explore and more interiors to go into. And I'd even love if they put in a couple of little mini games, you know.
Other than Roach Run?
Other than Roach Run, yeah. What was it about Gwent that was so immersive and addictive? Like, I never play mini games and video games, but I got obsessed with Gwent in The Witcher 3. I think it was because it was good. Easy. And it was easy. It didn't require a whole lot of skill. And I think for me, that's what kept me hooked on it.
Well, that, and it's a good card game. And it was well thought out. And the rules made sense. And it wasn't just thrown in there. Gwent can actually be completely played on its own. What was it? It's a joke just like last week, Toasty, that The Witcher is just a trading card game with an RPG story surrounding it.
Yeah. It's just a trading card game with RPG elements. So,
but it's so funny because I don't play card games. I don't like them. I would never play the standalone Gwent game, or and I would never play Hearthstone. Or, but for some reason, the Gwent in The Witcher 3 got me really addicted.
I think it's just because it's easy. It's fun. It's not like, I mean, a standalone Gwent game is not like time consuming in itself. You're going to end up playing more and more, so then it will end up being time consuming. But it's not like, you know, and overly so.
Geralt's Gwent that he gets to play is totally pay to win. So I just bought all of the like really powerful cards and easily won everything.
Yeah, and you get more powerful cards as you're going, and you don't have to like, you don't really have to spend a lot of time like strategizing or deck building or anything. It's fairly simple, and it ties into the story. You get to see the characters, like you know the characters you're looking at, which makes it more, I think, likable.
Yeah, and once you get Ciri, it's like it's all over. You're never going to lose a game again. Was it Gaunter who plays the first game of Gwent with him, or was it a different character?
This is a professor from Oxenford.
Oh yeah, that was it. Yeah. He meets Gaunter O'Dim in the same
bar.
Tavern though, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, wow. I would love something like that in Cyberpunk. Or even like, do you remember in Grand Theft Auto 4 when you would go drinking with your friends and they would get really drunk and fall around the streets and have funny conversations? I kind of wish there was something like that in Cyberpunk as well.
I was like, you definitely can get drunk and you'll do like the whole woozy animation, but yeah, nobody ever reacts to the fact that you're stumbling around drunk.
Like, I would love to just go get really drunk with Judy and, like, the two of us stumble out of a club at 2 a.m. and, like, fall over a bin and try and get her home and, like, have a great night. And, like, in the morning, the two of you wake up, like, on the floor or on the couch and just, like,
yes.
burger in one hand and, like, vodka in the other hand.
Hangover scenes. Video games need more hangover scenes.
True, true. Yeah.
So normally how we end our episode is that we go through and we talk about the other shows that we do, but the biggest thing that I make sure at the end of every episode is that we thank you for allowing your music to be so freely used in so many different ways and platforms. We put links to your YouTube channel and the miraclesound.rocks in every episode description, and I just wanted to personally thank you because it's like I've bought your music for the longest time, and so I have all the downloads and on there, and it's to be able to freely use it in this show is just amazing. So I wanted to personally thank you on that. And of course, give Miracle of Sound a shout out. Go follow them on Spotify, YouTube, TikTok, all the places. Are you on Twitter also, or are you not a big social media guy?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter as well. I don't use it all that much, but yeah, I try not to partake in Twitter discourse these days.
Yeah.
I was a Twitter addict around 2014 and 2015, and it was not healthy for my brain. So I very much only use Twitter now to kind of promote my work or make some silly jokes or post some screenshots of the games I'm playing. But taking part in discussions, I kind of tend to avoid.
Yeah.
Particularly in the last 2 weeks.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was actually I did a podcast for many years with Stephanie Sterling and Laura Dale, and I loved doing the podcast. It was so much fun, but I just found so much freedom when I left in not having to have an opinion on stuff. Because no matter what your opinion is, I even remember like when Cyberpunk came out and I liked it, there were people who were really angry about that, you know. And with social media, I love not having to have opinions on things, and just I'll chat to my friends about games and I'll chat to my wife about things, and that's enough. That's all who needs to know. My opinions on everything. Just here to make tunes, man. I want to just make people happy. I don't want to be involved in any discourse.
All right. Is there anything else that you wanted to shout out or plug, or things that you're working on right now that we can look forward to? And then we'll end the show.
Yeah, I always have new music coming out. Well, actually, I'm working on a remasters album at the moment. I'm working on an instrumental album, which will have actually quite a few cyberpunk-y style instrumentals on it, which not the whole album, but there's about four tracks on it that actually have a very cyberpunk-y feel. And I'm also working on a new Viking drinking song called Skal, and that will be my final Viking song for a very long time because I'm burnt out on Vikings now. And yeah, you can find me on TikTok, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram and YouTube and Spotify, all at just Miracle of Sound.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and nerding out with us about all things. I guess that was kind of like all things. We hit a lot of video games today.
Yep. People will complain, hey, this is meant to be a cyberpunk podcast. I don't want to hear Gab going on about Elden Ring for 10 minutes.
It's fine.
We do enough cyberpunk lore in the lore cast. We can definitely tangent and diverge. And that's what I think is so interesting about like the interviews and just talking to people about things that they love. So yeah. All right. Until next
time. Thanks for having me.
So that was an amazing interview. And I had so much fun, one, fangirling over somebody that I have adored for the last decade. But what about you? Did you like seeing your twin in real life?
Yeah, no, it was an incredibly interesting interview. I don't have the same experience as you, fangirling for a decade. But you know, it was interesting. I definitely feel like I need to check out more of his catalog. But yeah, it was fun. It was cool getting his opinions on all, on fucking everything.
Right. We definitely went off of just talking about Cyberpunk and talked about a lot of different games, but I feel like nerd genre is so intertwined in everything. You know, he's done music about Witcher. He's done music about Game of Thrones. So he's got a very vast repertoire of things to dive into and talk about.
I definitely want to listen to his Witcher stuff. I know that for sure.
The White Wolf song is so good. And again, I could fangirl even more because I'm like, oh, yeah, you want a song about Bioshock? You want a song about... It's like they're all in there. And what's really cool about his YouTube channel is that he'll separate his playlist by game. So if you just want to listen to his Witcher songs, you can click on The Witcher and then it'll show that playlist.
Nice. That makes it easier.
All right. I think we're good. So let's wrap it up for the night and we will see you all next week. And if you like to hear more from me, you can hear me on the Two Girls One Ship podcast where we analyze, rate, and review all that the world of video game romances has to offer.
Yeah, and if you want to hear more of me and occasionally Genesis as well, you can check out the Witcher Lorecast. We talk about, you know, everything Witcher. And then I also do the Cyberpunk Red Live Play podcast, Cyberpunked, Cyberpunk apostrophe D, with the Fumbling Four and Almighty Crit Gang.
Yeah, and of course, as literally in every episode, I will shout out Miracle of Sound once again for not only being an amazing artist, but being a super chill dude, and thank him for coming on to the show to chat with us. Now, while you're out there, remember,
stay safe in Night City.
Are you a fan of Elden Ring? Are you confused about the lore as pretty much everyone else? We've got you covered. Check out the Elden Archives, a lore podcast that helps to explain every little confusing detail about the lands between. Things like what exactly happened on the Night of the Black Knives, or what we really know about characters like Mikola. Just like the show you're listening to now, we're on the Robots Radio Network, so you know it'll be good. Wondering how to find the show? Easy. Either go to robotsradio.net or search Elden Archives on whatever podcatcher you're using right now. Bookmark the show for later, and we'll see you in the lands between. Again, that's The Elden Archives, FromSoft Lorecast, available everywhere.